Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't stepped like locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3, Raymond Parks III.
One of God's own prototypes. A high-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it? Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Smart. Step back against Nimhard. Three ball. Good. Rattled home for Javonte Smart. Freshman on freshman. One made the all-freshman team. One did not. I can tell you, somebody got robbed. 51-47. Smart with a big-time triple.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is Raymond Parks III, host of the Rap Game with RP3 here on an earlier than normal edition of the Rap Game. I want to say good morning to all of you out there. Good morning to Cody Schutz back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. He's going to man the ones and twos all this week for us here on the Rap Game as we'll be broadcasting live from Le Triomphe for the Louisiana Open presented by Mistras. That's right. We'll be here live and local all week long here on 103.7 The Game. I will be broadcasting live here in the morning. The good brother Ben Love will be handling bumper-to-bumper sports live out here as well for one of the premier tour stops stateside for the Web.com Tour. And we'll be broadcasting live here all week, and we'll have several guest folks associated with the one of the best golf tournaments that the state puts on. We'll have Danny Jones on tomorrow. We'll also have some golfers as well throughout the week. We have a jam-packed show for you today, though. It's March Madness, and we'll be talking some LSU hoops. We'll break down their NCAA tournament matchup. We'll also touch on Saints free agency. There were some moves over the weekend. Max Unger had an unexpected retirement, but the Saints quickly turned around, signed someone to replace him. We'll also talk about former Raging Cajun great Elfrid Payton, who notched his name in the record books with his fourth consecutive triple-double, as would be it. LSU baseball bounced back with a big weekend series sweep of University of Kentucky to open up SEC play. And we'll also have a Louisiana wrap-up as well. Guest today, 7:32, our good friend coming on early for us, Jarrett Rozier of Tiger Details, going to be breaking down LSU basketball. Then we'll talk with Jeff Palermo. He'll talk LSU and Saints with us. That'll be at 8:02. And then at 8:32, the king of all of Acadiana sports media, the one and only George Faust from KLFY, be talking some Raging Cajuns baseball as well as some March Madness. But let's start things off with LSU hoops. As you know, last week we broadcasted the Rap Game with RP3 live from downtown Nashville. I was there for the SEC tournament, and I expected to be there all weekend. Well, that's not how things ended up. You heard the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair, on the call there. Javonte Smart did get to play in the game. Remember, LSU, after indefinitely suspending second-year head coach Will Wade the day before the regular season finale versus Vanderbilt, which was held inside the PMAC. That next morning, they also made the decision to, because of an abundance of caution, was their words, that they decided to hold out Javonte Smart, the star freshman, for the LSU men's basketball team. And that was in reference to the university wanting to perform their own investigation into the Smart thing that Wade was mentioned saying on the FBI wiretap conversations that Yahoo Sports and then later ESPN did elaborate reports on Thursday of last week. or I'm sorry, Thursday of the previous week when that bombshell dropped. There was mention of a Smart thing. Speculation ran rampant that it was, in fact, Will Wade was talking about Javonte Smart. So the university, in their words, quote-unquote, abundance of caution. So Javonte was held out of the regular season finale versus Vanderbilt, but he did get to play. And LSU officials made that decision 2 hours before tip against Florida in the SEC tournament quarterfinals there at Bridgestone Arena. We were actually live on the air when the news broke, and it was a terrific moment for the young man. Both interim coach Tony Benford and Javonte talked about this afterwards, where they said, you know, Benford got the call, he got the clearance. They were already preparing Javonte to go. He told Javonte during film session that morning that there was about an 85 to 90% chance that Javonte would get to play in the tournament. And then he called them. The rest of the team was already on the bus. They were on the bus, loaded up to go to the arena, and they called Javonte, and then they all came off of the bus. Every single member of the team apparently came off the bus and welcomed Javonte back to being able to play. They all went to the arena together. And Javonte came off the bench. He did not start. He came off the bench. And he played well in 31 minutes. He scored 13 points. Naz Reid had himself a hell of a game. I mean, he was playing like the guy that experts and NBA lottery draft folks look at and go, this guy could be a first-round pick. This is a guy who possibly could be a late lottery pick. 26 points, 14 boards for the big fella, the freshman. And LSU did a terrific job early on. They attacked Florida over and over again. They went right after him in the paint. Just attacked and attacked and attacked. And they had a 10-point lead at a half. And then LSU extended that lead in the second half to 13. Florida shot less than 30% from the field in the first half. LSU was playing defense. They were playing inspired. They had energy. They were feeding off the fact that Javonte Smart was able to be on the court. And then in the second half, I don't know what happened. They stopped playing defense as aggressively. They got sloppy with execution. There was a couple of possessions down the court. Ball went out of bounds. Didn't even touch a fellow Tiger. They rushed some shots. They got sloppy on defense. And we talked about this on the show last week. Florida is not a team to be sloppy against. This is a team that LSU already had to go to overtime with not once but twice this season. Florida split the series, including beating LSU inside the PMAC. This is a well-coached team by Mike White. They got some young freshmen, but they're not the biggest team. But they got guys that can grind it out. They got guys that compete every possession. The second half was highlighted, if you want to use that term, by the fact there was a 6-point swing there, ladies and gentlemen, in the second half. It was pretty crucial, too. Skylar Mays puts down a powerful dunk, his first dunk since the Memphis game back in 2018. Okay, earlier in the season. And that got the crowd amped up, and they were up by three. Florida came right down the court, shot a three, but then Naz Reid was called for a foul away from the ball, away from the shot. The officiating crew counts the three, calls Naz Reid for the foul, and there was some confusion with us in media row, as well as, you can imagine, the thousands of fans, purple and gold fans that were in the stands there in Bridgestone Arena, on, okay, if the foul occurred before the shot, then the shot shouldn't have counted. But they counted the shot. The officiating crew says, in fact, that the foul with Naz Reid pushing someone down, even though it looked like he was going through a screen, that was happening during the process of the shot. So the 3-point shot counted. Then Naz got called for the foul, So Florida was going to have two shots. Well, Coach Benford was fired up. He needed an explanation. He thought the call was bogus, and they teed him up. So then Florida has four free throws to shoot. They make three of four. That's a six-point swing just like that. Florida went down from being three after the Skylar Mays dunk to being up by three. That was a critical play in the second half, without a doubt. Coach Benford even said afterwards, interim coaches don't get any calls. I firmly believe if Will Wade was still there, if that would have been Will Wade, I've seen Will Wade chew out an official far worse than that. I've seen him berate an official far worse than that numerous times throughout this season and last year. If that was Will Wade, he doesn't get teed up. That said, that is not what cost the Tigers the game. What cost the Tigers the game was the sloppiness on defense in the second half and the lack of execution on offense. Florida shot nearly 60% in the second half. Once again, nearly 60% in the second half. They scored 51 points in the second half. Florida is one of the most inept teams offensively in the entire SEC. Their bread and butter is shooting, getting hot at times from three, but mainly playing defense with that 1-1-2 defense, slowing you down and making you play at their pace. They're not known as a team that's going to put up a lot of points. That's not what they do. That's not Mike White's coach team, and it's particularly not this year's Florida team. But LSU gave up 51 points to Florida. 51. And that's why they got sent home early. Niles Reed had himself a monster of a game, probably locked himself up as a first-round draft pick, possibly late lottery pick, 26-14. The big fella even came up from long range. Now, he drained 1-3 that tied the game at 70 all late in that ball game. Then he came back down again, and the big fella did it again, shot another three. Now, both threes, look, Nas Reed's not going to get a lot of vertical on his three-point shot, ladies and gentlemen. He's flat-footed when he shoots that three-pointer. But he makes it, and he made it, more importantly, when his team needed it the most. Tied it up at 73-73. But then they came down, Florida did. And they brought the ball up, and Johnson, the forward, Conte Johnson, he had 16 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists. He drove on the right side of the court, on the right side of the court for the Florida Gators, and then kicked it back out to Nembhard, the guard, who was standing at the top of the key, right behind the three-point range, buried it. He caught Tremont Waters, first-team all-defense in the SEC, co-defensive player of the year. They caught Tremont Waters sleeping. Tremont was ball-watching a little bit, took his eyes off his man just a split second. Nembhard made him pay, buried the three, game over. 76-73, Florida Gators upset LSU. They advanced on to the semifinals where they lost to eventual SEC tournament champion Auburn. And that win, that victory, locked up an NCAA berth for the Florida Gators. They were on the bubble, taking down a top 10 team ranked in the country in the top overall seed in the SEC tournament, got Florida into the big dance. LSU, meanwhile, cost themselves a 2 seed with the defeat. If they had beaten Florida and advanced at least to the semifinals versus Auburn, even if they would have lost to Auburn, they would have had a very good chance of being a 2 seed. But that loss pretty much sealed their fate to be a 3 seed. And they were given no favors by the selection committee when the brackets were released yesterday. Yes, they are 3 seed. Yes, they're going to be taking on number 14, Yale, the Ivy League champs, 11:40 a.m. on Thursday in Jacksonville. But they're in a regional with the regular season and tournament champion of the Big Ten, Michigan State, who's the 2 seed, coached by the legend Tom Izzo. Oh, and by the way, in that regional is also Coach K, the Duke Blue Devils, the number one overall seed for the tournament and the number one seed in that regional. And those are just the two seats above them. There's plenty of other dangerous teams in that side of the bracket for the LSU Tigers. Before we head to break, though, real quick, want to give a round of applause to Javonte Smart, because the young man actually talked to the media after the game on Friday. That's right. The young man who had been held out for an abundance of caution, who many speculate is the person mentioned by Will Wade in those wiretap conversations by the FBI. He stood right there at the table afterwards inside the Bridgestone Arena along with Naz Reid and Coach Benford and answered questions. He stepped up. He was even asked about, did he know anything about what Will Wade was saying in the wiretap conversations? The young man said, no, sir, I do not. I have nothing to do with that. And he answered questions about the team and about them getting ready and about playing for Coach Benford. He was there, and he stepped up for his team. So for a young man with a ton of speculation surrounding him, for a program that's under the microscope and being criticized nationally, for him to show the maturity to be able to sit there and answer questions, bravo to him. Tough spot for the young man to be in, but he did a terrific job with it. Showed a lot of character and showed that he's very much not a kid, very much a young man. So congratulations to Javonte Smart for showing some character there by answering questions afterwards. We'll deep dive into LSU's place in the NCAA tournament, their matchup with Yale, and much more when we come back here on The Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsons III, broadcasting live from Le Triomphe for the Louisiana Open, right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to The Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parsons III, here on a special early edition of The Wrap Game. We'll be broadcasting live all this week right here from Le Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in lovely Broussard for the Louisiana Open. The Pro-Am will be later today out here, and we'll have guests throughout the week for the Louisiana Open, including the one and only, our good friend, the good brother himself, Danny Jones, will be joining us tomorrow live on the air out here at Le Triomphe. But it's time for some more LSU hoops talk. We talked about how they came up short at the SEC tournament there in Nashville. But despite that, the Tigers still received the 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. They'll be in the East region, and they will play the 14 seed Yale, the Ivy League champs, in the first round of the NCAA tournament on Thursday at 11:40 a.m. So I'm going to anticipate that a lot of our listeners out there across Acadiana will, in fact, not be getting a lot of work done starting about 11:35 till about 2 o'clock on Thursday. There'll be some extended lunch breaks, I do believe. Now, LSU is going to be playing in Jacksonville, and LSU does have a little history there. The 2016 that reached the Final Four, if you remember, they started off playing the first-round games in fact, Jacksonville. And they ended up going all the way to the Final Four. That was the great Big Baby Davis, Tyrus Thomas-led teams by then-coach John Brady, which was the fourth and last Final Four appearance for the LSU Tigers. Now, LSU will face off versus the Bulldogs there in Jacksonville. The winner of that game will face the winner of 6-seeded Maryland and the winner of the 11-seed play-in game between Belmont and Temple. So one of the what they call the first four games will be played, and then that winner will have to turn around and play 6-seed Maryland, and that's who the winner of LSU versus Yale will play. Now, LSU has some history on its side. Overall, 3-seeded teams in the NCAA tournament are 1-15-21 overall. They have an 84.6 win percentage in the first round of the tournament. So that's a favorable matchup. History is on LSU's side. And if LSU can put aside the Will Wade drama, the never-ending Will Wade drama, and just play for one another and play for each other, they should be good. But Yale is no joke. Yale won the Ivy League tournament on Sunday by beating the top seed Harvard. The win, which was a first for the team, gave them the auto bid for the NCAA tournament. Yale and LSU have only played once before, way back in December of 1969. That game, Yale won 97-94. Yale has not been a presence in the NCAA tournament. This is they've only made it to the tournament four times and have only advanced out of the first round once. They beat Baylor 79-75, and that was recent. That was in 2016. Okay, so that was only a few years ago, so they are not going to be intimidated by LSU. They beat Baylor, and then they turned around and lost to Duke. James Jones, the Yale's head coach, is the longest-running men's basketball coach in the Ivy League. He's also the 11th longest-running coach out of the 353 teams in the NCAA. And a star to kind of keep an eye on Thursday, junior shooting guard Mai Oni could be the first Ivy League player drafted in the NBA since 1995. He's averaging 17.6 points and 6.4 assists per game. He's projected to be a second-round draft pick. So LSU versus an Ivy League team should be a favorable matchup. LSU's already considered a favorite to win the game. But that said, that LSU team that played in Jacksonville back in 2006 that ended up reaching the Final Four, they didn't have to deal with all this drama, and they didn't have to deal with all the stress of their head coach being indefinitely suspended, and didn't have to deal with their head coach feuding with the administration, and didn't have to deal with their head coach releasing a statement on the eve of them playing in the SEC tournament and causing to be even more of a distraction for the team that he claims to love. But if this team, led by Skylar Mays and Javonte Smart, Cavell Bigby Williams, Naz Reid, if they can come together and just play for one another, and more importantly, play for Wade Sims, their fallen brother, they should be just fine. And they could very well make it to the Sweet 16 or further. So we'll have to wait and see. But we won't have to wait long. LSU plays Thursday, 11:40 a.m. versus Yale. When we come back, Saints free agency talk right here on the Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I am your host, Raymond Parks III, here live on 103.7 The Game. Cody Schutz is handling things on the ones and twos there back in the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. I'm broadcasting live right here at Le Triomphe for this week's Louisiana Open. We'll be here all week, as well as the good brother Ben Love in the afternoons on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Thank you for joining us on this earlier than usual edition of the Rap Game with RP3. We've started off today's show talking heavy LSU hoops talk, how they finished at the SEC tournament, and then their seeding, getting the number three seed in the East Regional, and we'll be facing Yale on Thursday there in Jacksonville in the opening round, or what I call the opening round. They don't call it. They try to make us say the second round, but I ain't having it. I'm just not having it. The first four, the play-in games, that's bonus. That's not the first round. The first round is the first round. Stop trying to change me. But we're going to talk a little NFL free agency. Obviously, it opened up last week. The Saints were active to start off with. They put a focus on locking up their special teams guys. They signed up, re-signed Chris Banjo, backup safety, special teams gunner. They also got Craig Robertson, durable backup linebacker, also special teams captain. They got Justin Hardy, who has possibly potential to get more playing time as a defensive back, but he's also a special team star. They locked all those guys up, got Will Lutz, got him the 5-year deal as well, the place kicker. Mark Ingram left, to the chagrin of many on the Saints roster, including a good friend, Cam Jordan, who he came in with that 2011 draft class, as well as other guys on the team, including Alvin Kamara. So that did not go over too well with Mark Ingram. They decided to sign Latavius Murray, gave him $14 million for 4 years. Mark Ingram got $15 million for only a 3-year deal with the Baltimore Ravens. But this is a business, and you got to keep things moving right along. And the Saints did that. And they did that over the weekend because, unexpectedly, Max Unger retired. Now, I know some Saints fans, this is the Pro Bowl center leader of the offensive line for the New Orleans Saints. Remember, Max Unger was a champion with the Seattle Seahawks, Super Bowl champion. He was an anchor of that offensive line. When he got traded, folks in Seattle were mad. Teammates were mad that Max Unger got traded because of what he brought to the team leadership and how he made everyone all along the offensive line that much better. He was part of that Jimmy Graham trade, if you do remember. And the Saints, I do believe, got the better end of that deal. Because not only did that trade, that also trade also produced a pick that would eventually become Ryan Ramczyk. So they get Max Unger in the deal. He solidifies the offensive line. He becomes the unquestioned leader of the line. And Unger did get to a Pro Bowl this year. He was one of the guys that was more like an alternate that got in. He decided not to go to the Pro Bowl and opted not to go. And if you talk to folks that kind of paid attention to the New Orleans Saints this year, they said Ramczyk maybe lost a little bit. And Max Unger. And Unger may have lost a little bit. He is already in his 30s. He's been around the league a long time. You were hoping he would come back. He was still under contract for one more year, I do believe. But Unger's also not the type of cat to just stick around to stick around. Okay? Once his skill set starts to diminish, I always got the impression for him that he was going to be the type of guy that would walk away earlier than later. He was not going to just hang on for hanging on purposes, if you know what I mean. He had too much pride, and he didn't want to be the guy that was going to hurt his team. And for Max Unger to make that decision to retire, that's what that tells me. So the Saints, finding out this news after free agency had already began, you know, they couldn't go out and pop on one of the guys right off the start of free agency because, well, that time had already passed. So we're, you know, almost a week in now. But they wasted no time. And I'll give Mickey Loomis and Jeff Ireland a lot of credit there in the Saints front office for what they did. They got a center with starting experience after Unger retired on Saturday. And who is it? Nick Easton. That's right, formerly the Minnesota Vikings. He agreed to a 4-year deal with the Saints on Sunday night. According to the four-letter network, the deal is 4 years worth $24 million. That tells me that if you're going to pay a guy that much money, that he's going to be a starter for you right off the bat. That's kind of a very good rate for a top-notch center. Easton's only 26, guys. That's the other thing here. 26. You get a good, versatile offensive lineman, primarily a center, and he's only 26 years old, so you're getting the prime years. Once again, that restructuring of Drew Brees' deal to get free up the additional $10 million, roughly $10 million in cap space, paying off here for the Saints. Yes, they weren't able to get Ingram, but they brought in another power running back. They lock up all their special teams guys. Now they go out and have to fill a need. They're able to do so. They have the flexibility. They don't have to worry about moving money around or whatever like that. Now, I know they moved money around because there'll be a ton of dead money because of Drew Brees' renegotiated deal that's going to hurt them on the cap next year unless Mickey Loomis continues kicking the can down the road when it comes to that Drew Brees contract because he's constantly always restructuring it And eventually the Saints are going to have to pay up on that. But you got your special teamers back. You got Teddy Bridgewater back, who flirted with the Miami Dolphins. Dolphins actually offered him more money. He decided to stay. That could have been an easy starting job for Teddy Bridgewater, by the way. The Dolphins, who just signed Fitzmagic. That's right. The Fitzmagic lives on. This man is just making his way through the league, constantly getting starting quarterback jobs. He played for Tampa Bay last year, started for Tampa Bay. Saints fans will remember he lit up the Saints in the regular season opener inside the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Fitzmagic is now with the Dolphins. So the Dolphins are so desperate for a starting quarterback, they're throwing money at guys. Teddy Bridgewater said, nah, I'm good. I'm going to go back to New Orleans and learn under Drew Brees and play for Sean Payton for another year. So you got your backup quarterback situation. You got your power running back, your backup quarterback. You got all your special teams guys. They still need a tight end. No word on the Jarrett Cook situation. The veteran tight end who played for the Oakland Raiders for the past few years, he came in for an official visit. But good news about Easton. Unger surprisingly retires, and the Saints respond quickly. Got themselves a 26-year-old center who can play multiple positions. They only had two inexperienced centers on the roster, Cameron Tom and, of course, former LSU player Will Clapp. And Clapp got some reps last year at guard and at center when Unger got hurt. Now, Easton, if you want a little background on the newest Saint, he went undrafted out of Harvard. There you go, smart kid. In 2015, he began his career with the Ravens, but Baltimore traded him to the 49ers after his preseason during his rookie year. So he gets signed as an undrafted rookie by the Ravens, goes through camp with them, goes through preseason with them, then he gets traded to the 49ers. Then that same year in October 2015, the Vikings traded for him. So this guy goes undrafted. Baltimore takes him, signs him as an undrafted rookie free agent. He goes through preseason. Then he gets traded to the 49ers after the preseason's done. And then the Vikings like him so much that they trade for him in October of that same year. In 2016, Easton played in 11 games with making five starts. Then in 2017, he started 12 games. Much of that playing time, though, came at guard. Now, he missed last year. He missed the entire season last year because he was in line to be the starting left guard in 2018, but he missed last year due to a neck injury that he suffered in August during camp, and that forced him to miss the entire season. So he is coming off an injury. There may be some concerns there, I know, Saints fans. But that said, you're getting a young guy fairly on the cheap. He's versatile. He can play guard for you or center. So that gives you some more flexibility with the rest of free agency or with the draft as well, which is great. You know, Unger, look, he started 64 games for the Saints the past 4 years. He was reliable. He provided leadership. So, but they added some depth there, which was definitely needed for the New Orleans Saints. As for the Jared Cook situation, you know, Tyler Eifert was mentioned as a guy that could possibly come. Now, that's a guy that's dealt with injuries at least the last 2 years. Talented kid, I want to say he was a college star at Notre Dame, Tyler Eifert. And but he's been banged up. He spent his entire career with the Cincinnati Bengals. He actually re-signed a one-year deal with Cincy. They met with Jared Cook, though, who I mentioned, a star with the Oakland Raiders. No word yet on if a deal has been done with that. There's been no reports that they have locked up Jared Cook, the tight end free agent. But once again, this is what they've done so far. They gave Will Lutz a 5-year extension. They re-signed Craig Robertson to a multi-year deal, their backup linebacker, special teams captain. They got Chris Banjo. They got Justin Hardy. They brought in Teddy Bridgewater. They got a restricted free agent offer on Crawley. They welcomed in Malcolm Brown, the D-tackle from the New England Patriots. Still a young guy, just entering his prime. He's won 2 Super Bowls. He's played in 11 playoff games. He brings a lot of experience for being a young guy. He's going to help solidify that defensive line, give you depth. They bring in Latavius Murray as the power back. Now, obviously, they lost Mark Ingram. Alex Okafor, they left in free agency. He signed a deal with the Kansas City Chiefs. And Ben Watson, obviously, retired. And now they've added Nick Easton, versatile guard slash center. Also, they locked up Mario Edwards Jr., another defensive lineman on the cheap. So they added depth where they needed. They locked up their special teams. They added depth on the D-line. They got their backup quarterback. Now they got another offensive lineman to give depth. But still the big question mark is what they're going to do with the pass catchers. They need a pass-catching tight end. Josh Hill got injured, but Josh Hill got the concussion in the NFC Championship game against the Los Angeles Rams. That played a huge deal, a huge difference because no one was on roster to be able to catch the ball at the tight end position because Ben Watson missed that game because he was injured. But Josh Hill's not that great of a pass catcher anyway. He's a run blocker. They don't have anyone on the roster right now. Now, could they wait to the NFL draft? Could they get the LSU Tiger Foster Moreau with one of their draft picks? Absolutely. Now, Foster may be rising on boards due to his performance at the Reese's Senior Bowl in Mobile and then the NFL Combine. NFL Pro Day, the LSU Pro Day is coming up on the 22nd, by the way. I'm sure there'll be plenty of scouts there, not only for everyone else for LSU, Greedy Williams, Devin White, the usual suspects, your top 10 draft pick, projected top 10 draft picks, rather. But a lot of folks will be there for Foster Moreau, I can guarantee you that. So, we'll keep an eye out, see what happens with Jared Cook, see if the Saints are going to be able to get their pass-catching tight end that they so desire and need. Also, does Dez Bryant come back? Be interesting to see. We'll dive more into New Orleans Saints free agency later on. But if any updates do happen with the Jared Cook situation, or if it's Dez Bryant, whoever it may be, we will keep you posted right here. But once again, the Saints are able to make some of these moves, guys. Whether it's the Malcolm Brown move, poaching him away from the New England Patriots, world champions, or whether it's trying to get Jared Cook to sign, or whether it's being able to go out and sign Easton. They have that money due to the restructured deal that Mickey Loomis and Jeff Ireland were able to construct with Drew Brees. That opened up $10.8 million. Now, in the grand scheme of things of a billion-dollar industry like the NFL, you probably are thinking $10.8 million is not that much, but it is. And for the Saints to be able to make what I call these mid-level moves, spending about $20 million, $17 million, $28 million to get these mid-level guys to help with depth, to fill key positions on the roster, that's huge. Now, of course, you're going to have to pay for it eventually. Well, I mentioned it earlier. Mickey Loomis has been kicking the can down the road here when it comes to the Drew Brees contract and eventually having to bite the bullet on all that dead money. And they're going to get killed. I want to say the dead money for next year, if they don't restructure the deal again, is going to be like $40 million against the cap. But that'll be for... That's a 2020 problem. The Saints are trying to make moves right now, left and right. Locking up all the guys on special teams, adding the depth on the defensive line, getting the backup quarterback, trying to get a pass-catching tight end. They're doing all that right now to make one more run at it with Drew Brees with number 9 under center and try to get that second Lombardi trophy. The restructured deal allows them to do that. We'll see if it pays off. When we come back, we will wrap up the first hour of this early edition of the Rap Game with RP3. Right here live from Le Triomphe here in Broussard on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III. broadcasting live from Le Triomphe here in Broussard for the Louisiana Open. We'll be broadcasting live all week right here at Acadiana's, one of Acadiana's premier golf courses and the premier golf tournament in the state. Used to be the first stop stateside on the web.com tour. Now it's the second, but it's still highly anticipated. A great field. We'll be out here this week trying to win the trophy and the big giant check, which I love. I'm a big fan of the big giant oversized check. Before we wrap up this first hour, I want to touch on something about the NFL. We were just talking New Orleans Saints free agency. And look, just when you think we can get to a moment where we don't have to talk about a football player and domestic violence involving the NFL, well, sure enough, you'd think wrong. So the Kansas City Chiefs, and I know what you're thinking, well, Raymond Kareem Hunt, didn't they get rid of him? Isn't he suspended 8 games by the NFL, and he accepted his punishment by the NFL, and he's now already signed with the Cleveland Browns? That's true. The star running back who the Kansas City Chiefs cut last year after video was released of him pushing down a woman in a hotel, hotel hallway, and then kicked her. He was cut by the Chiefs, very talented running back, pass-catching running back. Well, he signed a deal worth over $1 million to go to the Cleveland Browns, and then over the weekend it was announced, I want to say this broke on Friday, that Kareem Hunt it will not appeal the NFL's decision to suspend him for 8 games, that he has accepted it, and that he will serve his 8-game suspension, and that then he'll take the field after that for the Cleveland Browns. Nope, this is another Kansas City Chief. This was Tyreek Hill. Now, if you remember, Tyreek Hill pled guilty to domestic assault and battery back in 2015 after his then-pregnant girlfriend said that he choked her and punched her in the face and punched her in the stomach in December 2014 when he was a student at Oklahoma State University. The judge deferred Hill's sentence for 3 years and gave him a clean slate. According to court records, Hill's domestic assault and battery charges from 2014 were dismissed and expunged. That same woman is now at the center of an investigation. She's now engaged to Hill, and now she's the center of a new investigation. Police are investigating incidents of suspected child abuse at the home of Chiefs wide receiver Tyreek Hill. The same child that was inside the womb of his then-girlfriend when he punched her in the stomach, that child. Reports are that the child has a broken arm. Officials have been called to the same address to investigate a report of child abuse or neglect. Hill's name is directly listed on the report. The Chiefs have released a statement saying the club is aware of the investigation involving Tyreek Hill. We're in the process of gathering information and been in contact with the league and local authorities. We'll have no further comment at this time. He's one of the most sensational wide receivers in the league. He's only 25 years old. But, once again, now domestic violence or domestic abuse or child abuse is now circling another Kansas City Chiefs star. What will the Chiefs do after their own investigation? Will they keep him? Will they cut him? Will they suspend him? Likely the NFL will suspend him. Will the Cleveland Browns try to sign him, or will the Washington Redskins? Once again, it's just proof of it doesn't matter if you beat up on women or children, you will still have a future in the NFL, ladies and gentlemen. That is fact. Second hour of Rap Game with RP3 coming up right here, live from Le Triomphe.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana's sports station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set for like locker.
It's Rap Game with RP3. Raymond Parts III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic. and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome to the second hour of the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, here on a earlier than normal edition of the Rap Game with RP3. I'm broadcasting live from Le Triomphe here in Broussard for this week's Louisiana Open. First hour, we talked LSU hoops talk, how they finished at the SEC tournament. Again, receiving the number 3 seed in the East Regional. They will take on Yale on Thursday in the NCAA tournament. We also broke down a little bit of that matchup, gave you a little bit of information about the Bulldogs. They're of the Ivy League. We also dived deep into the Saints' free agency, Max Unger's retirement. They've already locked up his replacement. And they still have money to make moves, including trying to go after tight end Jared Cook of the Oakland Raiders. And then I also touched on the Tyreek Hill situation with the Kansas City Chiefs, the talented, young, dynamic, playmaking wide receiver who, once again, appears to be in trouble with authorities due to a domestic violence situation. This particularly the abuse of his 3-year-old son, who apparently has a broken arm. But let's switch it over to the hardwood now. Back to the hardwood, rather, but in the pros ranks. Look, we all know the New Orleans Pelicans this season has been a massive disappointment. We've talked about it ad nauseum here on the airwaves on 103.7 The Game. Anthony Davis requested the trade. It became a public fiasco. They ended up not trading him. Dill Demps loses his job as general manager. Deservingly so, I may add that. But look, this team wasn't going many places anyway. Despite the additions of Elfrid Payton, former Raging Cajun star, and Julius Randle from the Los Angeles Lakers in the offseason, look, they played well together early on, but Payton was banged up for most of the year. Julius Randle has been a double-double machine for this team. He's played extremely well. But even with Anthony Davis and a healthy Jrue Holiday, this team just couldn't gel. This team wasn't clicking like it needed to. This was a team that paled in comparison to the team that rallied together following the Boogie Cousins injury the previous season when they were able to deal for Nico Maricek, and then they made the run to get into the postseason and then upset the Portland Trail Blazers in the first-round playoff series there in the Western Conference. So even before the Anthony Davis trade drama and fallout, this team really was out of it to begin with. Now, we only got 11 games left in this NBA regular season. I know it's already flown by. Jrue Holiday looks like he's been shut down for the rest of the year. Anthony Davis, who demanded the trade, who the team is going to move in the offseason. Gail Benson, the owner of the New Orleans Pelicans, has made an agreement with Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, and the rest of the NBA front office that they will restrict Anthony Davis's minutes, but that he will still play, so they won't be quote-unquote tanking, but his minutes will be restricted. So no Jrue Holiday. Anthony Davis is being restricted. This is a team that's going nowhere. They're battling to probably try to get a lottery pick. And even though the losses keep piling up as they did, there's plenty to be positive about. And it starts with the former Raging Cajun himself. That's right, Elfrid Payton. As I mentioned before, he spent the majority of the season being banged up, injured, couldn't stay on the court, but he's been healthy the last month. And wow, has he made an impact for the Pels, ladies and gentlemen. Elfrid now has 4 consecutive triple-doubles. Now, the Pels came up short against the woeful Phoenix Suns at the Smoothie King Center on Saturday night. 138-136 overtime defeat to the Suns. But in that game, Payton marked his fourth straight triple-double as he got 16 points, 16 assists, 13 rebounds. Okay? That's elite company. Once again, Elfrid Payton has four consecutive triple-doubles, five overall in the season, but he's now got four straight. Would you like to know there's only been four other players since 1983-84, which is well before Cody Schutz, producer extraordinaire, was born, that have recorded four straight triple-doubles. The people on that list: James Harden, the Beard, MVP. Russell Westbrook, Mr. Triple-Double himself, league MVP. Magic Johnson, Hall of Famer, league MVP. Michael Jeffrey Jordan. That's right. Elfrid Payton is now on a list with Russell Westbrook, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and James Harden. He's averaged 10.3 points, 7.1 assists, and 5.2 rebounds so far this season. His fifth in the league. Now, his performances are not keeping them out of the lottery. But is Elfrid Payton a piece that they could keep moving forward? And I believe so. Look, you're not going to have to break the bank for Elfrid Payton. He was a lottery pick coming out of college for the Raging Cajuns. The last time the Raging Cajuns were in the NCAA tournament, Elfrid Payton was on the floor. High character guy, leader guy. He's a quiet dude. He's not boisterous. He's not a big, you know, big yeller, screamer, nothing like that. He's a quiet leader, but a heck of a player when he can be healthy. And the health issue is a concern. He was on the all-rookie team as a rookie for the Orlando Magic. That's who drafted him in the lottery. And then they traded him to the Phoenix Suns, and then New Orleans signed him on the cheap with the one-year deal this past offseason. He has played well, and he plays well with Drew Holiday. And once again, if they, the Pels, can get Mr. Triple-Double to come back on the cheap, not cheap, not like a discounted rate, but maybe sign like an affordable three-year, four-year deal, or maybe a three-year deal with a team option for the fourth. How great would that be? He plays well. He can run the point. You can let Drew, even though Drew can fill in at the point, he's more of a natural number two on the floor. Have Elfrid Payton at the one, Drew Holiday at the two. And I'll take it a step further. Why not bring Julius Randle back? Julius has done nothing but play well for the New Orleans Pelicans. Throughout all of the chaos and everything that's occurred, Drew Holiday has played well. Elfrid Payton has played well, and Julius Randle has played well. Now, those three guys are not the makeup of a championship team by any stretch of the imagination. That goes without saying. But that does give you a nice little core to build around. And if you have Elfrid Payton at the one, and you got Drew, who's one of the best two-way players in the NBA, top five, definitely a top 10 two-way player, maybe even a top five two-way player in this league. And you can re-sign Julius Randle, because Julius Randle, he'll be a free agent, as will Elfrid Payton. Both of those guys, all reports are, want to stay. Remember, Elfrid is a New Orleans guy. He's a West Bank guy. He's a Louisiana native. This is playing for, like, the home team. If you can get Elfrid Payton to come back and Julius Randle with Drew Holiday, and then whatever you can get from Anthony Davis, whether that's starting players with the Boston Celtics, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, whoever it may be, and a lottery pick, and then you may have your own lottery pick. So you got those three guys, add two players from Boston and two more lottery picks. Ladies and gentlemen, that's a playoff team. That's definitely probably a five seed at least. Now, you're not going to be able to go toe-to-toe with the Golden State Warriors, but Elfrid Payton's still young. He's in his mid-20s. So is Julius Randle. Drew Holiday's a little bit older. He's been in the league longer. but he still got fresh legs because he had injuries early in his career that kind of avoided the wear and tear on his body of having to deal with the long season of the NBA. Plus, he gives you leadership. So you can have Elford, you can have Julius. Add some young pieces, two lottery picks, and some other young players, maybe from the Boston Celtics that are in their early to mid-20s. I don't know, man. That's got to be a team that you got to like, but you got to love the effort from Elfrid Payton going out there. Four consecutive triple-doubles as a member of the New Orleans Pelicans. Having a terrific season, because look, it looked like he may be lost for the season because he suffered not one, but two separate injuries this year that caused him to miss significant time. At least half the season, Elfrid Payton's been banged up and missed. The Pels return to action tonight. They're going to be on the road facing the Dallas Mavericks. 7:30 tonight, Pels at Mavs. We'll have to see if Elfrid Payton can make it five consecutive games posting a triple-double. If he does it, we'll talk about it. Hell, even if he comes up short, we'll still talk about it. He's a former Raging Cajun, so he's going to get some love from us here on the Rap Game with RP3. When we come back, we're going to dive into some LSU baseball. Things were circling around LSU. They were struggling with the lineup. They were struggling with the bullpen. They were struggling with starting pitching. They had dropped out of the top 10 in the majority of the five major polls in college baseball. What did the Tigers do? Paul Maneri's bunch. They opened up SEC play with a sweep of the Kentucky Wildcats there at Alex Box Stadium. We'll dive deeper into that when we come back here on the Rap Game with RP3, live from Le Triomphe for the Chittimacha Louisiana Open, right here on 103.7 The Game.
And at third, still just one out. 2-2 to Watson. Hit in the air, high and deep. This one blasted to left field. See ya! Three-run home run off the bat of Watson. 14-3. Tigers lead here in the bottom of the fourth inning.
Welcome back to the Rap Game with RP3, live from the Chittimacha Louisiana Open here at Le Triomphe in lovely Broussard. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Cody, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing pretty good. Not to complain on a Monday at a good weekend of baseball. Maybe not the best weekend of basketball, but I enjoy baseball. That I will say.
Are you enjoying the fact that I am not in the studio with you? I mean, let's start there, because you didn't have to deal with me and my shenanigans on Friday because I was in Nashville. And now you're not even going to see me all week. Or can you go ahead and just admit to all the listeners in Acadiana that you will, in fact, miss hanging out with the RP3?
Yeah, sure. I'll say that, for your sake. We'll throw that out there, but no, I don't necessarily miss your antics in here. I still get all the hot takes in my headphones, so that's all good. And I'm quite comfortable today. I can neither confirm nor deny that I am still in my pajamas.
We are starting the week off strong, brother, on this earlier than normal edition of the Rap Game. Cody, appreciate you, what you're doing there back in.
I don't want to overdress for the occasion, considering I knew I was going to be in here by myself this morning. So,
Understood. Just make sure you have pants on. That's all I care about.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
Neither confirm nor deny. So, LSU baseball team, they had some struggles so far during the regular season. Pitching staff, there's been question marks about that, about Zach Hess being the Friday night starter. The bullpen has had some moments as well where Todd Peterson got roughed up in that Cal series and blew a save. The lineup has struggled. We talked about it last week against Northwestern State, where their young man, their pitcher, shut down the LSU lineup in that midweek game. But even though questions surrounded the LSU baseball team, they had fallen out of the top 10 in the majority of the polls. I want to say they were still number 10 in one of the polls. They bounced back in a big way. They opened up SEC play strong as they swept Kentucky at Alex Box Stadium. Now, you know, they had entered the series only 12-5 over and on, and I discussed the pitching staff had not really proven itself. This should give the Tigers definitely a confidence boost. The pitchers were very good in this series against the Wildcats. The doubleheader, the second game of the doubleheader, they scored 16 runs. The hitters in the hitters scored 25 runs. The pitchers, they looked good. They really did. They looked like the staff that Paul Maneri said that the staff he was hoping would be during media day more than a month ago. They finally kind of turned it on, so to speak, for the Wildcats. Eight pitchers held Kentucky to a mere 7 runs over 30 innings of work. Okay, that's doing a really good job. Okay, 8 pitchers holding Kentucky to 7 runs over the course of 30 innings. The Tigers had entered the series with the highest ERA of any team in the SEC. It was almost 5, 4.83. And because they had struggled. Look, mainly it came down to Zach Hess and the other guys. They struggled to throw strikes. Okay, if you can't throw strikes, you're going to have an issue when you're out there on the bump, and teams are going to tee off on you, and that's exactly what had been going on through the better part of the season so far. But against the Wildcats, that was not an issue. They threw strikes, and they only surrendered a handful of runs in the series. Pitching looked good. Zach Watson, remember Zach Watson struggling to begin the season? Star outfielder who's having issues, couldn't get his mojo right at the plate. Well, he is on fire, ladies and gentlemen. Zach Watson. They had moved him. He especially has found his groove since he was moved to the number 2 spot in the lineup. And after that happening in the batting order, he has found his swing again. He was a triple shy of the cycle during the second game of the weekend series against Kentucky, and then he followed that with 2 more hits on Sunday. In the 3-game series against Kentucky, Watson was 8-for-13 with 6 RBIs. Before he made the move to the number 2 spot on the lineup, he was batting under 200. Now, he's the only LSU hitter batting over 400. So, Zach Watson tearing it up. The team tearing it up. The pitching has found its groove. Now, there's still question marks, okay? That's and I think Paul Maneri would even be honest with that. As positive as this was over the weekend, disposing of Kentucky, getting a sweep in the opening SEC series of the season, they still got issues. You still want to see Zach Hess be more consistent. You need to have him have multiple starts of pitching well, proving that he can go longer than 5 innings and not giving up 5 runs. Eric Walker is still coming back. Hilliard is still coming back. You know, they still have a little ways to go there in that regard. You know, Marceau is another one. That's another freshman. Jaden Hill, another freshman. So this is a great spot that the Tigers are in, without question. Getting a sweep over Kentucky, kind of turning things around, weekend series, conference play, absolutely headed in the right direction. But this team is very talented, but they have to be more consistent, and they're going to have to build off of this Kentucky series moving forward if they want to have the type of season that not only they want to have, but all LSU fans expect them to have. Right? That's the other thing. Expectations are enormous for the LSU baseball program. They have always been that way since the 80s. Since Skip Bertman built them into a national powerhouse, okay? expectations are high year in and year out. And they started this season ranked as number one or number two in most of the publications, in the major polls. And LSU has lived up to that billing. Or they started to live up to that billing this past weekend. They had struggled 12-5. Look, 12-5 is still a good record. Okay, there will be a lot of teams that will take being 12-5 and ranked around the top 10 in the country. LSU expectations are obviously higher than that. But it's also a big deal for them to get this confidence boost by beating a team in SEC play, opening up the conference slate 3-0, and now they can kind of build that momentum heading into the rest of their schedule. Because it only gets tougher from here. Yes, they took care of Kentucky this weekend. That's great. Now let's see if the LSU Tigers can keep that going. They're going to be playing Nicholls Wednesday at home in Alex Box Stadium. Colonels come to town 6:30. And then it's on the road for a three-game series this coming weekend at Georgia. Then they'll be back home for McNeese, and then they have to be on the road again in the SEC at Mississippi State, who is a quality ball club. So a couple midweek games here, Nicholls and McNeese against teams from the Southland, but they'll be on the road for the weekend series, so it's important for them to get that weekend series sweep. We're going to talk more Tigers when we come back after the break, when we welcome on our good buddy Jarrett Rozier from Tiger Details, talking LSU men's basketball and a little baseball as well, right here on The Rap Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to The Rap Game with RP3, broadcasting live here from the Chittimacha, Louisiana Open at Le Triomphe Golf and Country Club right here in lovely Broussard. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos live there at the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. But now we're going to head out to the ArtCo Equipment Hotline and welcome on our first guest for this earlier than normal edition of the Rap Game with RP3. He's our good friend from Tiger Details, the one and only Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how are you this morning, brother?
Hey, man, I'm doing all right. How are you all this morning?
We're doing well, man. Let's get right to it, though, Jarrett. Let's talk about LSU basketball. A disappointing finish there at the SEC tournament. They get the great news in the morning that Javonte Smart, two hours and 10 minutes before tip, they find out that Javonte Smart is the university is going to allow him. He's been cleared to play for the tournament. Jubilation for the team. They all run off the bus to greet him and congratulate him for being able to play. And then they go out there and they play a tremendous first half of basketball, Jarrett. They held them to 30% shooting. They have a 10-point lead. They build that up to 13 in the second half. And then the wheels just fall off, brother. And they let Florida score 51 points on them in the second half. And they end up losing, getting bounced from the tournament. It's the fourth straight loss for LSU at the SEC tournament. And that dropped them from a likely number two seed in the NCAA tournament to number three. Your thoughts on what occurred in Nashville?
Yeah, I mean, with Javonte back in play and the way that they started that game, everything seemed to be going well for them. The first two meetings with the Gators at halftime, the team leading the game had ended up winning despite, you know, those overtime matchups. But both of those halftime scores were 3 points or closer. And so when LSU is up 10 points at halftime against a team that isn't known for scoring a whole heck of a lot and scoring a lot in flurries, and then they stretch the lead, as you said, in the second half to 13. As an LSU fan, you have to start to feel pretty good about the situation. But then Florida started moving the ball pretty well, was able to get some easy baskets off turnovers. The turnovers were about even in the second half, but Florida outscored LSU off those turnovers 11-2 and kind of helped get them going, and then move the ball well in the half court to get some better looks. Ended up shooting almost 60% after the midway mark. And then you have that play that I'm sure a lot of people were talking about throughout the weekend where it looked like the foul on Naz Reid was before the Florida three-point shot was attempted, and instead, they give him an and-one situation, and then Tony Benford, not real pleased, ends up compounding things with the technical, and so suddenly LSU is trailing late and did not take as much of advantage of some opportunities in the final few possessions as Florida did. LSU had a couple plays that they would probably like to have back, and Florida, I thought, executed really well down the stretch.
Yeah, Jared, I agree with you. Florida, I just think, executed better there. You know, being there inside the Bridgestone Arena, watching them play. LSU, Coach Benford said afterwards that they were sloppy. They were sluggish in the second half. They didn't have the same intensity. The one guy who did have intensity from start to finish was the big fella, Naz Reid. He had himself a hell of a game. He had those 2 3-pointers that tied the game at 70 and then tied it again at 73. Even though they're flat-footed three-pointers, they're still three-pointers that make. He played like a guy that looks a lot like a late lottery pick to me, Jared, and that was the buzz around the arena on Friday. I know he's had moments where it's been up and down this year, but he seemingly has progressed as the season has gone along. Do you think Naz Reid has developed himself into a possible lottery pick this summer?
I think he has that potential, but for him to secure that type of a spot just because of the ups and downs of the seasons and the ups and downs of the season, that he's still kind of early in that process. Looking at a lot of mock drafts in recent weeks, he wasn't even in the first round of some of those, and so to see the performance he had, albeit in a loss to Florida this past week, with as many eyes on them as have been on them at any point this season. They've had a few other big games. Obviously, Tennessee was one where he'd probably like to have that game back a little bit, but to be in the SEC tournament and have that type of game, I think, is a nice plus for him. We'll see how things go in the NCAA tournament, and then I'm sure he'll enter his name into that pre-draft process to kind of get some feedback on where he would slot in and whether he should make that move or return to school. And so I think we'll learn a lot here over the next couple months. He certainly has the potential, and you saw a lot of that on Friday, but how things actually shake out into reality, whether that potential is something that's there for him this summer or he needs to come back a year and really kind of round things out to prove himself on a more consistent basis, which is the way the NBA draft has gone in more recent years than back in the day when it was 13 high school guys in the first round. I think we'll see sooner than later.
Talking to Jarrett Rozier of Tiger Details. Jarrett, let's talk a little bit about, they dropped from the 2 seed down to the 3 seed. And not only do they drop down to the 3 seed, the selection committee puts them in the same region with the top overall seed, Duke, and the Big Ten regular season champion and tournament champion, Michigan State. That's your 1-2 seed, not to mention some other formidable opponents in that bracket. I know it's March Madness. It's always supposed to be tough. It's always supposed to be a difficult path. It's not easy. I get that. But, man, when you saw the bracket get released yesterday, brother, what was your first thought that they were the 3 seed and they had to play in the same region with Michigan State and Duke?
Well, look, through parts of the season when LSU was playing its best basketball, I feel like I heard a lot of students say, we want Duke, we want Zion. So if they put something together, they get that wish, I guess. It's one of the tougher regions for this basketball team to be in right now, particularly – at the top, when you talk about those two traditional powers both being in the way in that second weekend. I think, one of the things that stood out was some of the symmetry of that 2006 run with starting in Jacksonville, and they would have to go through Duke to get there and some of those things, set up for really nice storylines if they can string something together. But ultimately, you have to start later this week with a good Yale team, a Yale team that the last time they were in the NCAA tournament upset a higher seed. And so I think before they can get to those bigger games, they've got some kind of interesting matchups early. And if they can weather some of those storms that I guess we've seen in recent weeks, as well as just what the difficulties that a Yale or a Belmont or a Maryland or a Temple could provide this weekend, that by the time they get to a Michigan State, we've talked all season about LSU being one of the most capable and talented teams in the entire country. And so if they can get back on the right foot here this weekend, avoid an early exit, and kind of get into a rhythm and start feeling confident about themselves, even, you know, without Will Wade at the moment, and don't expect him back during this run, then what happens on any given Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday in March, if it was a sure thing going in, then I think we'd all be a lot richer. So we'll see how some of those might shape up if they can get to those.
Jared, you mentioned Will Wade. He makes, I would say, a poorly timed statement. The day before his team is supposed to take the court to try to win a conference tournament, he releases a statement with the ongoing feud that he is having with Joe Oliva, LSU athletic director, and the LSU's president. And look, we can spend a whole hour of this show talking about Joe Oliva and, you know, his him falling short of the glory, so to speak. But if you're Will Wade, I'm critical of the point of view of him deciding to release that statement saying he wants to be there, he wants to do this, he wants to do this. It just served as a further distraction for his team that he put together and that his team that he claims he loves coaching. Why do that? Like, that's what I don't get, Jared, is like, why would you put more of a spotlight and more stress on your kids that you're coaching or that you were coaching by doing that on the eve of them playing in the conference tournament?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the way that whole situation played out was pretty interesting late last week. And even, I mean, I thought the wording of the statement was interesting, that I advise my bosses to reinstate me under the circumstances. I really didn't take that much more in terms of a distraction angle for the players from it, just because the whole thing got to be such a circus even days before that I don't know that any of the away from the team back and forth with the administration and with Will was going to get more difficult for them to handle than what they're already dealing with. And again, you and I have talked about the fact that team can handle a lot of that pretty well. I really, after that Florida loss, I don't know that I thought that the distraction of Will Wade and everything that was happening there cost them so much. Just like we were talking about last week, I think they miss Will in some key game moments just from what he brings, but I didn't take his being away as a distraction as being something that cost them as much as a few other things just in game. And so I didn't think that much of that aspect. I know that he is trying to figure out a way to get back with this team, because he does care a tremendous amount about them and want to be a part of what's going on right now. And I'm sure he was advised that this was a move to be made. And so it was kind of a maneuver from his side and, you know, the people he's working with to try to work himself back toward the bench. I don't think it made
much of a difference in that regard so far. You know, my personal reaction, but that's where we are.
Wrong with Jarrett Rozier of Tiger Details. Yeah, I think you make a strong point there, Jarrett, about it may not have affected the kids. I think it may affect Coach Benford. I mean, I just think having to constantly answer questions about a guy that's not there, I think it places a burden on those guys, maybe more on the coaching staff than it does the players right now. How impressed were you, though, that they, you know, they let Javonte Smart talk to the media, and the first question that was asked, and it was asked by Pat Forty from Yahoo Sports, was about, you know, did he know anything about that conversation that Coach Wade had, and Javonte answered it, and he stood up there and answered all the questions. I came away immensely impressed with the young man, and I say young man on purpose, that he was out there front and center, and him and Naz Reid both are freshmen, and they're both answering questions with everything that's swirling around. How impressed were you by that, to see Javonte handle it the way that he did?
Yeah, I was really surprised when I saw that Javonte was going to be one of the players addressing the media after the game, and so was really interested to see how he handled some of that, because you knew the questions were going to come, and thought he did a tremendous job again. And I think absolutely right for you to emphasize the fact that he's a pretty young man. He's not a five-year NBA vet. He is a freshman in college and sat up there in that scenario and handled himself very well.
Jarrett, let's talk a little bit about, you know, this team now. They know where they're going. They know they have the expectations. You mentioned the fact that the last time they reached the Final Four, their fourth trip to the Final Four was back in 2006. They started off that year in Jacksonville, and along the way they upsetted teams left and right to get to the Final Four. That was the great Big Baby Davis and Tyrus Thomas led team. You know, obviously we know Yale is not going to be intimidated because they just knocked off Baylor a couple years ago in the tournament. With that being said, what do you think the expectations are for LSU? You know, we've talked about this team possibly being a Final Four team. We've also talked about this team possibly being upset, you know, in the first or second round. You personally, who's covered this team, you've seen them up and close. You've seen the day-to-day operations. What do you think, based on the bracket, what do you think this team could do?
I expect them to end up kind of between those two, between the ceiling and the floor, I guess, and make it to that second weekend and maybe run into some trouble there. I think they are capable, where they are right now, certainly, of beating every team with them in Jacksonville this weekend. I do, again, think it's going to be some challenges, and so they have to come out there and they have to play good basketball for 40 minutes and can't take any of these teams lightly. I'm sure a lot of fans will, casual fans will not necessarily know as much about these programs and see just the names and think that LSU should be able to cruise right past them. I do think that LSU certainly has some advantages in each of those matchups. All of these teams are kind of high-scoring, up-and-down teams, starting with Yale, and I think that bodes well for LSU because that's the way LSU likes to play. But at the same time, they have a pretty veteran group, some guys that were freshmen on that 2016 team, including one of the standout guards, Alex Coleman, who is a 6'3 guy, Mie Oni, a junior, 6'6, so big physical veteran backcourt, which on the flip side, we've seen against teams like Florida is not something that matches up particularly well for LSU. And so I think you just need to see LSU go out there, take care of the basketball, and play their game, you know, match some of that running. But when they get in the half court, they've got to take advantage of having those bigs that not a lot of the teams that they're going to see this weekend should be able to match up with. If LSU can get the ball inside to a Naz Reid and have Emmett Williams, Cavell Bigby Williams, and Darius Days going.
Jared, before we let you out of here, brother, I want to touch on football. I know spring football is going on, and usually this is the time of the year that guys maybe come to the realization that they're not where they need to be when it comes to the depth on the roster. And LSU's had several guys now enter the transfer portal during this, the latest being Manny Netherly, the junior cornerback who was a wide receiver coming out of Texas and a three-star prospect coming out of high school. He joins a list of guys here, and not only with Manny Netherly, but Dontrez Scott, the defensive end outside linebacker, entered the portal a few days earlier. Then Dominic Livingston, another D lineman, and David Cotton. So that's four scholarship players that have now entered the portal. What does that do now for Ed Orgeron and his staff? Are they going to try to fill those needs possibly with some JUCO transfers or some guys, grad transfers or anything like that? What does this do now for the football team throughout the spring?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll continue to kind of weigh the options and check around, you know, keep their ears open to some of those possibilities that you just mentioned, some veteran guys that that are maybe looking to switch schools one way or another. We saw the Joe Burrow news didn't happen until pretty late in May, and so there's still a lot of time now to potentially get a guy or two in here before the summer. But a lot of those positions too, that, you know, those aren't guys that were going to start for them necessarily, and they have some depth at some of those positions. I really was kind of surprised that Manny put his name in there, because they've been pretty thin at cornerback, at least this spring. I mean, they've got all the freshmen that are coming in and are expected to play a role pretty quickly. But I didn't expect that name to go in there at this point, considering that Kerry Vincent's been working a lot at safety, Christian Fulton's been out, and so Manny was right there kind of behind Stingley Jr. and Kelvin Joseph. But while the staff prepares some of those other guys that are still there to just kind of take on a little bit bigger of a role, maybe take a few more reps and whatnot, I know they'll also be seeing what the options are to maybe bolster that depth here over the next few months.
Well, Jared, brother, I appreciate you making some time for us a little earlier than normal this week, my man, but much appreciated, and enjoy yourself the rest of the week, and we'll talk to you soon, brother.
Likewise, man. Looking forward to the NCAA tournament as always.
It's Jared Rozier, Tiger Details, giving us the lowdown on LSU hoops and some football news as well. We'll wrap up this second hour of the Wrap Game with RP3 right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III. Second hour is in the books, ladies and gentlemen. We got a jam-packed third hour for you. Jeff Palermo coming up after this break on 103.7 The Game live.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time to step your game up.
Boy, you wouldn't know how to write your name if it wasn't set for the clock.
It's Rep Game with RP3, Raymond Parks III.
One of God's own prototypes. High-powered mutant of some kind never even considered for mass production. Too weird to live, too rare to die.
Want to interact? Call in at 337-706-0111.
We have it. Yeah, we have it.
RP3 is taking the mic and bringing you to the center of the sports world on Rep Game with RP3 on 103.7 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
You just got to keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Solid. I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
Welcome to the third and final hour of this special earlier than normal edition of the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, and I'm broadcasting live here from the Chittimacha, Louisiana Open here at Le Triomphe in lovely Broussard. Our main man, Cody Schutz, is handling things there at the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing in Upper Lafayette, making sure everything goes off without a hitch. We're going to head out now to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest for today's show. He is the news and sports director at the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, and he's a diehard Chicago Cubs fan, which I'm not going to hold against him. It's the one and only Jeff Palermo. Jeff, how are you this morning, brother?
Doing.
We're going to go ahead and reestablish
Jeff, how are you this
connection there with Mr. Palermo.
He was just so fired up about me saying that I wasn't going to hold him being a Cubs fan against him. That must be what happened. But we're going to talk to Jeff Palermo. He's the co-host of Tiger Rag Radio. And like I said, he's the news and sports director at Louisiana Radio Network. And he's going to help us give us even more breakdown of the LSU men's basketball team, their performance at the SEC tournament, his thoughts on their matchup and the seeding that they received in the NCAA tournament. Plus, we'll talk about LSU baseball with Mr. Palermo. Jeff, are you there, brother? How are you this morning? We are still efforting to get on Jeff Palermo. He'll be joining us. Coming up, we will... Jeff, how are you this morning, brother?
Raymond, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine, brother. I'm doing fine. I was a little worried there, though, man, when I said that I wasn't going to hold it against you that you were a Cubs fan. I thought that you got angry and hung up the phone on me, man.
That's all right, man. That's okay. It's not worth getting angry about if you run into another fan of another team.
That's okay. I'm a diehard Braves fan, so I got nothing but love for the Cubs. I watched them a lot as a kid growing up because they were the only team I could watch on the air with WGN. So my first game was actually a Cubs game, Jeff. 18 innings. Greg Maddux started the game. He did not finish it. Andre Dawson, Ryan Sandberg, Mark Grace there at Wrigley Field against the Montreal Expos. So the Cubbies always have a soft spot in my heart, brother. So we're good to go.
That's great. Good to hear.
Well, Jeff, let's start let's start with baseball, first of all. The Tigers, they needed this sweep, this series sweep over the weekend, open up SEC play. The bats were tremendous. They just teed off on Kentucky's pitching. But LSU's pitching finally coming into their own, returning to form or returning to the form we all hoped they would be this season. Your thoughts about the opening weekend series of conference play against the Wildcats for the Tigers?
Well, you started to see the pitching come around really about a week ago, I would say. And it all kind of started with a relief outing by Devin Fontenot last weekend when they took on Cal in game two of that doubleheader. He came in for Eric Walker, and Devin Fontenot pitched three shutout innings, and that really set the tone for what we saw this past week with some really good pitching. It continued into Natchitoches, even though LSU lost that game because the bats weren't hitting. They pitched well against Texas Southern on Wednesday, and then against Kentucky, they did great. Now, Kentucky is a team that got a lot of newcomers on that squad. They got some JUCO players that they're really hoping could make the jump from junior college to playing in the SEC, and I think LSU took advantage of it. Zach Hess finally gave you a really good start. Yeah, it was still a lot of walks, and I would say that would be the big thing that you look at, that you're still seeing too many walks. They walked four more hitters yesterday despite winning 7-2. So when they take on a better offensive team, and they're going to start facing some better ones, especially this weekend against Georgia, who's coming off a sweep over South Carolina, if they keep walking, guys, they're going to find themselves getting in trouble. But this weekend they were able to avoid it, and they took care of business after a really tough, hard-fought game in the first game of the series on Saturday, having to win that in extra innings. And then after that, the bats came alive, and the pitching continued to do well, keeping the Wildcats off the scoreboard.
Jeff, let's talk a little bit about Zach Watson. He struggled to start the season. The batting average was hovering a little below 200. Now it's above 4. He's been on a tear since the move in the lineup. Why did you think that was such a considerable, has made such a considerable impact for Zach?
I think it's not only to move to the second spot, but he also did a slight adjustment in the batter's box, and that's really allowed him to take off. And he's been hot. He's been absolutely red hot. He was 8 for 13 this past weekend against Kentucky with 6 RBIs. So he was batting. It was a little bit alarming. He was batting under 200 when he was batting fifth on the season. Now he's the only LSU hitter hitting over 400 on the team. And he's just taken off, and the offense is following suit. He had a big game Wednesday against Texas Southern. Had a big game in Saturday's second game of the doubleheader where he was just a triple shy of hitting for the cycle. And it's nice to see. And that's what you know, Zach Watson's not going to stay hot for the entire season. Antoine Duplantis got off to a really red hot start. I would say the first couple of seasons, he's kind of trailed off here a little bit. So you look for somebody else to get smoking red hot. And right now it's Zach Watson. Eventually it's going to be somebody else. It might be Daniel Cabrera or Josh Smith or somebody, but you try to ride this as long as you can. And, for Zach Watson, it's nice to see because, you know, coming into the season, not to say that there were any questions about him, but his sophomore campaign didn't go as well, I think, as the freshman season. He wasn't able to live up to expectations, struck out way too many times, been able to cut down on the strikeouts so far this season. And it's he's right now LSU's hottest hitter and arguably maybe their best player right there along with Josh Smith and Antoine Duplantis and Daniel Cabrera as well.
We're on with Jeff Palermo. Jeff, tell me a little bit about Chris Reed. You know, he rejoins the team, and he's been on fire as well of late. Talk to me about his performance and what you're seeing from Chris out there day in, day out.
It's just completely unexpected. I mean, he wasn't even in the picture when the team began preseason practice in January, and then about a week or two in, they recognized they needed another infielder on the left side of the field just in case, because they really didn't have third base really wasn't locked up for him, and they really didn't have anybody in case Josh Smith got hurt. I mean, they had Hal Hughes, but in case Josh Smith got hurt again and Hal Hughes had to move to short, they needed a little bit more depth on the left side of the infield. And with one of their pitchers not able to pitch this season, it opened up a roster spot for Chris Reed, and he's taken full advantage of it. And he's hitting fourth in the lineup. Who would have ever believed that? Now, I don't know how long that's sustainable for him to continue to hit fourth. I mean, he drove in a couple of runs yesterday with a two-run single because he's not really a power hitter. He does have one home run this season. But even doubles and triples, he's not a guy that's – he's mainly a single hitter that's going to give you a good at-bat. He's going to work the count. So I don't know if the number four spot is where he'll stay the rest of the season. Right now, they'll keep him in there as long as the offense continues to put up the runs like it has, at least in the last couple of games. But it's been a tremendous story. And, for a guy that was not involved in fall ball and not really practicing, I don't know. Maybe it's because the pressure isn't on necessarily to perform because this is kind of a gift to him. And the fact that he's back on the team after basically being cut in the offseason, and he's just taking full opportunity of it. It's nice. Last year, Austin Bain was the guy that kind of came out of nowhere and helped stabilize the offense, and this season it's been Chris Reed.
We're on with Jeff Palermo. He is the co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, and he's the news and sports director at Louisiana Radio Network. Jeff, let's talk before we wrap up our baseball discussion. I want to touch on Zach Hess. Lots of talk all season long about him. You heard it from fans. I know we heard it here at the station, and I know you've heard it as well, that why is this guy the Friday night starter? He's more of a bullpen guy. We understand that he's Paul Maneri's dude, so to speak, but, you know, he has no business being a starting pitcher. Zach's stuff, you know, he's going to have walks. That's just the type of pitcher he is. Do you think, based on his performance at Kentucky, do you think that he's turned a corner, and do you believe he's going to continue being the Friday night starter?
Yeah, I think he's going to continue to be the Friday night starter because they really don't have another option. Eric Walker is still building up strength for him, after coming off the Tommy John surgery. And even if Eric Walker is on top of his game, I wouldn't say he's necessarily a Friday night starter. I mean, you need to have electric stuff. And when Zach Hess is on and he's not walking many people, he did walk several in the game against Kentucky. But, you know, when he's on top of his game, he's got the electric stuff to compete and go up against another team's ace. And that was a Saturday was a perfect example of it. And what a great job by Zach Hess to get out of that first inning. It did not look good. I think he walked a couple, gave him a couple of hits. I think Kentucky, he gives up a run, and then Kentucky has runners at second and third with one out or something like that, and he gets out of the inning with only giving up that one run, and that turned out to be the only run of the game that Kentucky scored. And you see that on all levels of baseball, where a lot of times it might take a few batters for a starting pitcher to settle in, and that's what I think you saw on Saturday with Zach Hess. But for that game, he looked like your ace. Now, the key is here with Zach, can he go to Georgia and then the following weekend in Starkville against Mississippi State and give you a very similar performance? Maybe not allowing just one run, but at least keep the other team to three or four runs at the most. What they don't need from him is where he's given up five runs in five innings or five runs in four and two-thirds innings, and he's pulled from the game. So they need more of what they saw on Saturday, and we've seen that before from Zach Hess. The question with him, though, always has been, can he duplicate it? Can he get on a roll where he gives you, you know, six, seven, maybe even eight starts that are really good starts, giving you a chance to win a game, even when your offense might be struggling against the other team's best pitcher?
Jeff, who's going to be getting the start on the bump on Wednesday night's game there at Alex Box Stadium versus Nichols, 6:30 first pitch? You can listen to it live right here on 103.7 The Game, home of the LSU Tigers here in Acadiana. Who do you think is going to get the start on the bump?
Maybe Jaden Hill if he's healthy. I'm not sure exactly, though, if he is. I'm sure LSU would love to get that talented freshman back out there. You know, we saw Cole Henry get the start on Saturday, so he looks like he's good. Eric Walker, you know, I don't know if they go to a guy like Mikhail Hilliard, who's now, I think, found himself as far as a role in the bullpen, so I think you keep him there. You know, they started Clay Moffitt last week against Texas Southern, and he did pretty good. And so maybe they go back to Clay. I mean, Clay has made three appearances this season, and he has yet to give up an earned run. And he made his first start last week against Texas Southern. Paul Maneri is kind of excited about what they're seeing from the senior out of Baton Rouge, and maybe they give him another chance on Wednesday to see what he can do.
Let's switch over to the hoops. Jeff, I was there at Bridgestone Arena for the SEC tournament. Early exit, kind of an unexpected early exit in a lot of ways for the LSU men's basketball team. They get Javonte Smart back about 2 hours before tip. They play a sensational first half, but then the second half they let Florida score 51 points and end up getting bounced early from the SEC tournament. Your thoughts on how the Tigers performed there against Florida in Nashville?
Well, obviously I think they missed Coach Will Wade. I mean, I think he would have been able to settle Tremont Waters down a little bit, who did not have a very good game. I think you know, obviously, when LSU was up by 13 and Florida was making the run, maybe Will Wade could have made some adjustments or changes. Now, the fact that they played LSU and Florida, the fact that they played Florida and it was a close game, well, they've had two other close games against Florida with Will Wade on the sideline. So, not to say that LSU would have ran away and hit in that game. And then, you know, I think Tony Benford brings up a good point at the end of the game that when you have an interim head coach, a lot of times the calls don't go your way. And there were a lot of fouls called on LSU. You get a silly technical foul called on Coach Benford that really changed the game. I think kind of changed the complexion of that game. So maybe it's good that they got this, they got it out of their system. Okay, they suffer a loss with Coach Benford. Maybe it's a learning experience now for him and the rest of the coaches there, Greg Heyer and Coach Armstrong. But I don't see this team, you know, before, you know, when LSU beat Florida in Gainesville, you were thinking, man, this team, they can make a real serious run. now I don't think they can. And one, it's because they don't have Will Wade. And I think the second is you have Michigan State and Duke both in their regional. It would have been better off if LSU went out west and Gonzaga was the top seed in their regional. Instead, you get Michigan State and Duke as your top two seeds. So I still think there's a good chance that LSU gets to the Sweet 16, but I think the run ends there once they if they face Tom Izzo and the Michigan State Spartans in the Sweet 16.
Jeff, brother, appreciate you making some time for us, as always. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon, brother.
All right, sounds good, Raymond. Good luck.
That's Jeff Palermo, co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, joining us here on The Rap Game with RP3, broadcasting live from the Chittimacha, Louisiana Open here at Le Triomphe Golf and Country Club here in Broussard. When we come back, it'll be time for some Louisiana wrap-up right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers.
Let's put the spotlight on the boot. It's time for the Louisiana wrap-up.
Welcome back. RP3 is hosting the rap game right now on 103.7 The Game, but I'm bringing us back from this break as I am here live in the 237 Roof Studios, powered by Lafayette Roofing. And the reason I'm bringing us back out of break is because it's time for the latest Louisiana wrap-up, and we have got a March Madness edition coming at you. Would we have it any other way? So, Ray, what do you say we start off this Louisiana wrap-up with a trip to Grambling? What do you got for us?
That's right. The Tigers fell short in their quest of winning the SWAC championship, the men's championship, but the Tigers are going to be taking part in some postseason basketball. Cody, the Tigers finished the regular finished the season 17-16 overall, and they have accepted a bid to play in the CollegeInsider.com postseason tournament, the CIT, my friend. They will be traveling to play at UT Rio Grande Valley at 8 p.m. on Wednesday. Some other teams that are part of this CollegeInsider.com postseason tournament, some names that you may know, Cody. Marshall.
The Thundering Herd.
Seattle. FAU, brother. Okay. Cal State Fullerton. Kent State. Oh, and much, much more. FIU. So some Texas State. So some fairly bigger names, but congratulations to the Grambling Tigers. Even though they fell short of reaching the NCAA tournament, the NIT, they still get a chance to play some postseason basketball, so big up to the Tigers for that.
Now what do you say we head over to Baton Rouge? We're going to keep with the March Madness theme. Let's talk NCAA tournament. We're in Baton Rouge, talking NCAA tournament, but not LSU. Ray, what do you got?
That's right, on the women's side, the Southern Jaguars. That's right. The women's basketball team, ladies and gentlemen. The Lady Jags won the women's basketball tournament. They won the SWAC conference tournament. They punched their ticket to the big dance. Southern did. They knocked out Grambling and the player of the year in the on the women's side. And Southern was able to do this. And now they're going to the big dance. The women's tournament will be released today, Cody. So we'll find out where the Southern Lady Jags will be playing. But congratulations to them representing Louisiana on the women's side of things. They will be taking part in March Madness in the NCAA tournament. Selection show will be tonight. And Southern, by the way, any Southern fans over, you can go over to BR tonight and watch the selection show party at the Grind. Southern University tweeted that out yesterday. So congratulations to the Lady Jags for winning not only the SWAC tournament, but also punching their ticket to the NCAA tournament as well.
We've reached the end of the line on this edition of the Louisiana Wrap-Up, March Madness style. And the end of the line, well, it's up in North Louisiana, Raymond. We're in Monroe now. What do you got?
That's right. The Warhawks. You know, they fell short once again in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, but it's been a good year for ULM. They finished 18-15 overall, Cody, and they're going to be joining. It's going to The CIT, my friend, the collegeinsider.com postseason tournament, it's going to have a very Louisiana feel to it because ULM will be joining Grambling in it. Instead of having that ULM-Grambling matchup that some people thought may happen, ULM will be taking on Kent State on Thursday of this week at 8 p.m. in the College Insider Tournament. ULM will be hosting, that's right, the Warhawks will be hosting a postseason tournament game. Also, they'll be looking to make a run. That's the second straight year that the Warhawks have been in that tournament. So congratulations to ULM still having some games to play for here in the month of March, Cody.
I mean, that's what you play for. NCAA tournament, CIT, doesn't matter. Postseason basketball, once you get there, that's why you play. So go win those games. Win or go home time.
That's right. Win or go home time. And we're going to talk more about March Madness for LSU, but we're also going to talk some heavy, raging Cajuns baseball and softball talk with the dean, the president, the king of all of Acadiana sports media, our good friend, Fausty, George Faust of KLFY. He will join us live right here on the Rap Game with RP3, broadcasting from the Chittimacha Louisiana Open right here at Le Triomphe in Broussard on 103.7 The Game. That music means it's time to welcome on royalty here to the Rap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parts III, broadcasting live from the Chittimacha Louisiana Open here at lovely Le Triomphe Golf and Country Club in Broussard. We'll be broadcasting live here all week on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. But right now we're going to head out to the Artco Equipment Hotline and welcome on our final guest of this earlier than normal edition of the Rap Game. He is the king of all of Acadiana sports media, the president, the dean, the fearless leader over at KLFY Sports, the one and only George Faust. Fausty, how are you this morning, brother?
Dude, I'm so great because I love this week. This week is the best week of the year for me. I love covering this golf tournament. It's one of my favorite things to do. So last year I got to play in the Pro-Am. It was awesome. And the guy I played with, Etchelan, he won the tournament. He's been on the PGA Tour now for a year. So yeah, I'm pretty geeked up, man. It's a good week. I love this week in golf. I love golf in general. So being able to watch guys just, you know, play golf at a ridiculously high level makes me excited and extremely jealous of the talents that they have. It's going to be a fun week.
What I just took from what you said, Fausty, was essentially that that golfer received the Faust bump in his success at the Louisiana Open and on the PGA Tour was due to his affiliation with the king himself. That's what I took from what you just said.
Look, I'm not, you know, it is, you know, he did rub, I mean, I kind of rubbed my positive vibes on to his positive vibes, and, you know, he just got a little extra, you know, from hanging out the whole day with Fausty, and probably the corn mock shoe. On Wednesday, the corn mock shoe is unbelievable. Out there at the seventh,
nice.
I guess it's 3, 7, and 6. They all come together there in Le Triomphe, and there's some phenomenal food out there for the Pro-Am. So yeah, it's a blast, man. It is definitely a good time. I like I said, I mean, this is something for years I've covered this tournament in excess, and not the band, but definitely it's something that that I enjoy covering and look forward to each year.
Well, Faust, I know I'll be seeing you out here this week, brother, and I know you love covering this tournament, and it is terrific. But I want to get your insight on the Raging Cajuns, my friend. Let's go back to hoops last week. Kind of a stunning ouster there at the Sun Belt Conference tournament. We thought that the Cajuns would at least try to make a run, and They were one and done there at UNO Lakefront Arena. Your thoughts on what you saw from the Raging Cajuns on the hardwood, brother?
Well, look, first off, I just think that you gotta commend guys like Jakita Gant and Marcus Stroman and even Malik. Malik had a great first half of the year, got hurt, and that really, I think that injury kind of derailed him a little bit. It kind of messed with the plan, because I really feel you put those three guys on the court and you have something really special. And it wasn't in the cards, I guess. But Jakita Gant, I mean, what can you say about this cat? He's the most dynamic player we've seen in a Cajun uniform in a good while, and he's really got an opportunity for himself to play at another level, the next level, whether that be the NBA or Europe or wherever that might be. A lot of people say he's got NBA type talent, and I don't disagree with that. But getting your shot from a mid-major is sometimes kind of hard, but. You can always hard work will trump everything, and I think Jakeem has an opportunity to do that. But back on the court, who would have thought that Jakeem in an 80% free throw shooter is going to miss two free throws at the end of the game and not be able to knock those down? And it's just disappointing that to see. I think they had such a phenomenal group of guys. This senior class was really, really one of the better senior classes that they've had under Coach Marlin, and obviously, with Alfred Payton and those guys, they played pretty well as well in 2014, getting to the tournament the last time Coach Marlin's got them there. It's just difficult to watch, because I really think that this team is better than a one and done in that tournament, and it just didn't work out that way. It was that's the way tournament play goes, and I think Coach Marlin is a little. You could tell the frustration, not so much with his players, but just with the whole situation. And I think they got the cards kind of didn't go their way with the injuries this year and the way things ended up in that tournament, and some South Al knocking down that last free throw, and then Cedric not able to knock down that shot at the end of the game, but. All in all, I mean, it's one of these things where, they're gonna have to reassess and turn the page and get on to next year and see what Coach Marlin. This is where Coach Marlin has to do some work here. I think is kind of getting out there and getting some guys that can replace what you're losing, because you're losing a ton.
George, were you surprised that they didn't take part in any of these kind of lower tier postseason tournaments? ULM, UNO, and Grambling are all taking part in the College Insider tournament. Any thoughts on that, why the Cajuns decided not to take part in any of those kind of tournaments?
You know what? I don't have a problem with it at all. I think it's because here's the deal. That's not what you're striving for. I mean, you're going NIT, you're going obviously number one, you're going NCAA tournament. That's what you want. You don't get that, you're looking at the NIT and everything else is. And that happened a couple of years ago. I remember the women's basketball team won the CIT 2 years in a row. And to be honest with you, it was like they won the Sunbelt, the Southland Conference, because it was like five teams from the Southland Conference and them. To me, it's nice, yeah, to have a postseason, to be able to keep playing. And what I like to see Jakeem and Gant continue to play, because I think they could probably win that tournament too, probably. But in the end, Dr. Maggard has done something. He's trying to elevate the program. And I think that's that when he came in, that stopped going to those little, tournaments that don't mean anything. I don't have a problem with not going to those, because that's not what you're striving for. You're striving to be something bigger than that. And just to go to a tournament, that you have to pay and you have to put up the money for, and you might not get a return on your money, because who knows how many people are going to come to a game. I think it's completely legitimate to sit that out and not play that. I'd much rather, if it's not the NIT or the NCAAs, you're sending a message to your program, to your coaches, to the future recruits that, hey, We're not about going to the CIT or the CTI or whatever, CBI or whatever it's called. We're about going to the NCAA tournament
Now, we came up short this year, but next year, you know, we're striving for that as well. So I have no problem with it.
Fausti bringing the hot fire about the lower tier tournaments. All right, brother, let's change over to softball. They had a big weekend. Curry had herself a hell of a day at the plate for the 10th ranked Raging Cajuns as they took out Troy in the weekend series in Sunbelt play. But that's not really the big headline from the series, right? The big headline was what they did there at Lamson Park for one of the greatest coaches in program history. I know you took part in that. You were there for that. Break it down. What was it like to see that, have the field named after one of the greatest coaches in Raging Cajun softball history?
Yeah, look, Yvette Girard is definitely that. And I mean, she's done so much, not only just for Raging Cajun athletics, but she's done so much for women's athletics in a time where, you know, now it's all about Title IX has kind of taken over and women's athletics and the equality that it's garnered right now. But back when she was the head coach in the 80s and playing and stuff like that, that was not the norm. I mean, they had to fight and claw for everything. I mean, she had to, you know, I'm sure cut her own grass and, you know, wash her own uniforms. From the stories I've been told, she was responsible for, you know, she would clean the team's uniforms, you know, on her own. They didn't have anywhere to do that. So the amount of struggle that she put forth not only did she have to do that, then they had to go play the games, and they did it at a high level, and she set a standard for Raging Cajun softball. And that standard has really, everybody's kept up that standard, and Coach Glasgow is doing a good job of making sure that's the case as well. It was quite an honor for Coach Girard and the Raging Cajuns. Now will always have that, and well deserved for Coach Girard. I mean, I've talked to her numerous times about softball in general, about being in running a program, and she's done such a great job of kind of setting the tone. And I know she ended up going to LSU, and she set the tone there as well, because to be honest with you, the Cajuns program has been and still is, the Cajun softball program is better than LSU when it comes to softball. It really is. There's no comparison. The legacy that the Cajuns have as opposed to what LSU has is quite different. LSU's been good as of late. The Cajuns have been good over a sustained period of time. So while LSU's kind of on the move here, it's the Cajuns that have consistently been better in the world of softball. So, and that's due to her. That's due to Yvette Girard, and you could say she's had a hand in both programs being able to be top tier level college softball programs, and definitely quite an honor for her. And it was really cool to see. They had it all covered up, and then they pulled them off, and you could see a Red Girard field behind home plate and up in center field. So always going to be there, and much deserved.
We're talking to the king of Acadiana sports media, the dean, president, CEO himself, George Faust, better known as Fausti from KLFY. Hey, let's stay on the diamond, but let's go over to the baseball team. You know, they've had some struggle this year, Fausti. We know that. They lose the series to Loyola Marymount, and then they drop the midweek game to UNO, but they rebound with an extra inning affair, a win, a 6-5 victory over Southern Miss, and then they take 2 of 3 and win the series on the road at Little Rock in Sunbelt play. They come back to the Teague on Tuesday when they host Northwestern State. Do you feel like the Tonys guys have turned a corner at all?
Well, I sure hope so. I think the key is to not stop working. And I know Coach Robichaud has a phrase that a lot of the players live by, work while you wait. And so I think that's they might have to implement that to the team where, you know, things aren't going their way right now. But in baseball, things don't go your way a lot of the time. And so you have to continue to work. And I think, Coach, if there's a guy and there's a coach that can handle a situation that the Cajun baseball program is in, I think it's Coach Robichaux. And I think he builds his teams to where they understand, look, things aren't going the way we want them to go. But that doesn't mean you stop working. It doesn't mean you stop doing what we've learned and what we're trying to teach you, because at some point it's going to click. And so maybe this series with Little Rock and the big win over Southern Miss with Oren Vaughn hitting that walk-off, those things are the kind of they're working, boom. They're waiting, and now, boom, it's going to take off. I sure hope so, because I really think there's something special with this group. Brennan Bro is a guy that I've kept my eye on, and it's interesting to see the guys who are coming in and want to be a part of this, and Brennan Bro is one of those guys. And so he's been on fire, and hopefully he can continue that. And maybe some other guys can step up and kind of help spark a flame. And look, they have a the conference schedule is in front of them. You can still do everything you want to do this season. It's still in front of you. That's the way I like to look at things. I mean, they have a plan. They have a conference schedule that they can go tackle. And then at the end of the day, they'll have the conference tournament as well. And look, Sunbelt Conference Baseball is one of these baseball leagues that can get 2 to 3 teams in. So, but you have to be winning. And so if that's going to be the case, if they're not going to win the tournament, then they can get in. They just have to start putting stuff together. And I'm hoping, like you said, this could be kind of a turnaround or a spark that will give them the opportunity to kind of make the salvage so far what's been a mediocre season.
George, one more question before we let you go, brother. Get out of here with this. You mentioned Brennan Bro, former St. Thomas More Cougar state champion. Yeah. He initially went to LSU, and things didn't work out there. He played limited amount of time last year for the Raging Cajuns, but he has been playing at a torrid pace this year. Do you think he's the bat that they've been missing this season?
Well, look, I do think that the answer in the short form. I do think Brennan's been a spark that maybe they didn't expect, because I kind of think of a guy like Daniel LaHare, who kind of fell off a little bit so far this season. He's trying to start, but that's another guy who needs to work while he was on top of the world at the end of last season. Now he's hitting a little patch where he's struggling a bit. So maybe Brennan is holding the fort, and now Daniel needs to kind of step up a little. But I do think that Brennan Bro is a bat that the Cajuns are pleasantly surprised. Maybe not surprised, but pleasantly it's a pleasant sight to see a guy like that come in and contribute and do it at a high level. And I think they're still waiting for another guy, because if you could get the production from Daniel LaHare that you got last year, and still have Brennan, I mean, think about that. Those two guys could be spark plugs in the lineup. And I just feel like maybe there's Brennan stepped up, but there's nobody else who's helping him out. I mean, Oren Vaughn obviously playing at a high level too, but there's a ton of guys that I'm forgetting, but each guy needs to kind of pull their own weight. But I do believe Brennan has been a pleasant, I don't want to say surprise, because you knew he was talented and you knew he was a kid who could make things happen. But I just think it's for fans, it was a little unexpected. For coaching staff, for the coaching staff and guys who cover the team, I think it's pretty, we expected something like that from Brennan.
Fausti, appreciate you as always, my friend. I'll see you out here at the golf tournament this week, and have a great day, sure. Man.
All right, man. Thanks for having me. We'll talk to you soon. Always a pleasure.
That's George Faust. sports director at KLFY and the king of all of Acadiana sports media. When we come back here on the Wrap Game with RP3, broadcasting live from the Chittimacha Louisiana Open here at Le Triomphe Golf and Country Club, we'll wrap up this earlier than normal edition of the Wrap Game right here on 103.7 The Game, your home for the LSU Tigers. Welcome back to the Wrap Game with RP3. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, broadcasting live here at the Chittimacha Louisiana Open here at Le Triomphe Golf and Country Club in lovely Broussard. I want to thank our guest today for coming on this earlier than normal edition of the Wrap Game. I want to thank Jarrett Rozier of Tiger Details. Also want to thank Jeff Plerimo from Tiger Rag Radio, as well as KLFY's own George Faust. Tomorrow we got a jam-packed show for you as well. We'll have Ron Higgins from Tiger Details helping us break down more LSU men's hoops. We'll have Les East from Crescent City Sports talking Pels and Elford Payton's triple-double quest. We'll also have Danny Jones right here from the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. And we'll have UNO head men's basketball coach Mark Schlesinger. Coach Schles will join us about his team's postseason in the College Insider Tournament. Thanks for Cody Schutz for manning the ones and twos back in the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. CBS Radio's up next, then Jim Rome Show, Jordy Holberg from 2 to 4, and then the good brother Ben Love will be out here as well at Le Triomphe, broadcasting bumper-to-bumper sports live from the Chittimacha Louisiana Open. Y'all be safe out there. Bundle up. It's a little chilly. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day.